Shomer Yisrael, Moshe Riz Yisrael, Al Yavad Yisrael, Amrim Shema Yisrael.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel, that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
Israel, Amrim Shema Israel,
the eternal light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today is Morton Wishengrad's adaptation for radio of the narration from the scenario The House in the Desert, a documentary film written by Joseph Krumgold for the United Palestine Appeal. Peter Capel is the narrator, and John Gibson plays Isaacovitz.
You have known heat in your life, but never like this. For this is the desert of the Dead Sea, the bottom of the world, 1,300 feet below sea level, the lowest place on earth. And in the summertime, the temperature rises to 135 degrees. The hotness of the salt earth, the rising mists of the salt sea, and the desolation of the land of Sodom and Gomorrah, where there is nothing except emptiness and a curse of God. I'm a scientist. When they built the big potash works on the northern shores of the Dead Sea, I came down from Jerusalem. It was then that I met Isaacovitz. He wasn't a scientist. If he had been a scientist, there would be no story to tell you. No, Isaacovitz was a night watchman. And during the daytime, when he should have been sleeping, he would look around instead.
As far as my eye can see.
What are you talking about now, Isaacovitz?
About what the Jews need more than anything else in the world. Space. Look around, Doctor. Nothing but empty space.
All right, that's the way it's been since Lot's wife turned into a pillar of salt.
But before that, things grew here. There were cities here, Sodom and Gomorrah and Zoar, trees and grass.
What are you driving at, Isaacovitz?
The Jews need space. Here's space.
Not here. Nothing has grown here for 40 centuries.
I can make things grow. What are you doing, Doctor?
Unscrewing the cap of my canteen. Hold out your hand.
What for?
I'm going to prove something to you, Isaacovitz. No, turn the palm up. There. A couple of drops of water.
Well?
Now let the water fall to the ground. Turn your palm.
That's funny. The water never reached the ground.
It evaporated. Isaacovitz, that's how hot it is. There's space here, all right. 100,000 acres of space. But it's space in hell.
You haven't proved a thing. All you've proved is that it's hot. Doctor, I can make things grow.
He was pathetic. A little man with stooped shoulders and nearsighted eyes. And a large, insane conviction that things could be made to grow and people could live in the desert of the Dead Sea. It was 1939. Isaacovitz began to annoy the agriculturalists at Rehoboth and in Jerusalem. He'd go around timidly knocking at doors.
For the third time, Isaacovitz, go away.
But all I want is advice.
You're crazy. I can't give you any advice. The entire scheme is crazy.
But there's so much land, so much empty land, enough for 50,000 people.
Here. Have a cigarette.
Thank you, but I don't smoke.
Now, where did you get the figure 50,000?
It takes 2 acres of land to feed a person for a year.
Go on.
And there are 100,000 acres of desert. That means 50,000 people can live on the land.
What land? As a comet, you lunatic, what land?
The desert.
Please listen to me. If there is 0.25% of salt in land, it's not fit for cultivation. Do you know how much salt there is in that land?
2%?
17%, Isaacovich. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
I count. Besides, you don't have to raise your voice at me.
I can't help it.
I could mix some fertilizer with the soil about half and half.
Didn't you hear a word I said?
Of course I did. All right, I won't bother you. I'll go away.
And so Isaacovitz went away. The trouble was that he always came back. He just couldn't face the facts. The heat was a fact. The salt was a fact. The almost total lack of rainfall was a fact. The hard, brittle, sterile soil was a fact. Scientific fact. But the trouble was that Isaacovitz was a night watchman and not a scientist. And so Isaacovitz came to see me. He'd been chased out of all the other laboratories. He brought me a flower pot.
I thought you might care to see this.
Isaacovitz, when are you going to learn to face facts?
I will, I promise you. Only I had an idea.
This flower pot.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing growing.
Uh-huh.
What did you plant?
A tomato seed.
How did you expect a tomato plant to grow in a soil saline to the extent of 17%?
I mixed the soil with fertilizer and I watered it every day for weeks. 2 flower pots. Nothing grew.
Well, I'm glad you're convinced.
Sure, of course. But let me show you something. Is it all right to break the pot?
Well, it's yours.
I did this to the other pot. Look at the earth.
How long did you say you watered the plant?
Every day for about 5 weeks, 2 and 3 times a day. You notice it too?
I'm not blind.
At first I thought the earth at the bottom of the pot had turned white. Then I realized that it was pure salt. Please, I'm not a scientist, but salt was washed down from the top, wasn't it?
There's nothing to tremble about, Isaacovitz.
100,000 acres, emptiness. So much empty space, and we need space.
Isaacovitz, don't jump. The little salt at the bottom of 1 flower pot...
2 flower pots.
It doesn't matter. 1, 2, 10. Nothing has grown.
Because the salt killed the seed. I'll wash the salt out first before I put the seed in.
My suggestion is that you mark out a plot of about 20 square feet.
You believe?
That's an awful lot of water you'll have to carry from the River Jordan.
I can do that.
Isaacovitz, in that heat...
I'm stronger than I look. If you don't mind, I think I should like to smoke a cigarette.
For months, I, my colleagues, we had explained the problem. We had recited the hard, unyielding scientific facts. And in return, Isaacovitz had recited his dream. He was a fool. He refused to face the facts. Absolutely refused. He insisted on trying to decipher a scientific puzzle with his heart. And so now he went back to wash the salt out of 20 square feet of soil. And for months he worked alone to grow life in that soil. And all he grew was the dread Jericho boil. He wasn't a good patient. The doctor had to be a little sharp with him.
Do what you're told, Isaacovitz.
Yes, doctor.
You've got a dangerous ulcerous growth.
Yes, sir.
You've got to keep off that leg.
Yes, sir.
And until it heals, you're not going to do anything foolish like carrying water on your shoulders, making 50 or 60 trips a day in that heat. That's ridiculous. You understand?
Yes, sir.
You're my patient, Isaacovitz. You're not a one-man, two-footed irrigation system.
Yes, sir.
And it's bad enough you have to work at night. From now on, you're going to rest during the day. That's plain, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Now, is there anything you want?
Will you mail this letter for me?
Certainly.
It's to my friend, the scientist. I'm reporting that the topsoil is entirely free of salt. It's sweet to the taste. And that maybe tomorrow I'll start mixing in the fertilizer. Doctor, you're not mad at me, are you?
both wrote me about it. It was amusing. Except for the curious circumstance that even when you smiled at Isaac Comets, you couldn't laugh at him. And so he mixed the fertilizer into his 20 square feet of soil, dipped his gallon buckets into the waters of the Jordan, slowly, painfully carried them across the hot, salt-crusted ground to the little plot he had marked out, step by step, hundreds of gallons of water. The temperature was 125 degrees in the sun. But my friend Arthur Cobbett walked in the shade, furnished by his own dreams. He poured hundreds of gallons of water in this way. He was covered with the salt of his own sweat. Slowly, he was washing the salt out of the ground. Dissolving the salt, washing it down, washing it deeper and deeper into the ground. His skin blackened in the sun. His hands became claws for the grasping of the handles of buckets. There was a look on the face of my friend Isaac Hobbits.
Isaac Hobbits, I'm not scolding. Your leg isn't any worse, but try to do a little less. Working at night, working by day. Isaac Hobbits, try to do a little less.
But it was 1939, and the Jews needed space. My friend Isaac Hobbits shook his head. All he was able to hear was the sound of his own dream.
When the salt is out of the ground, something will grow there.
Something did. It happened in the year 1939, in the desert of the Dead Sea, where no life had existed in all the recorded centuries of man, 1,300 feet below the level of the sea, where no life was possible, a life was born. I hurried down from Jerusalem to see.
The doctor was with me.
That's so. I happened to be watching.
It's here in this paper bag.
Be careful, please.
He was digging. I would say he dug down to a depth of a foot when he found it.
A worm. A live worm. It's in that paper bag.
Still alive, Isaac Hobbit.
I am not wrong?
No.
Where a worm can live, a blade of grass can live.
Yes, Isaac Hobbit.
Where a blade of grass can live, people can live. I'll continue washing the soil a little longer. Then I'm going to start to plant.
Science must also have its humility. I know now that in the land Eretz Yisrael, there is no more challenging word to a Jew than the word impossible. I know now that the vigor of a dream can oppose the logic of science, that need can overcome authority, that men must sometimes untrain themselves from the habits of fact in order to be able to look beyond fact. There he was, Isaac Hobbits. I didn't even know his first name. There he stood in the desert under the sun of Palestine, the symbol of an entire people compelled by need to heaven. So I gave my friend Isaac Hobbits another cigarette and returned to my laboratory. 2 months later, he summoned me again.
I have grown one tomato plant. Come.
I hurried to him, away from all the facts in my laboratory. Down the winding road from Jerusalem, past the yellow of wheat and the green of sesame and the brown of fallow fields, into the land of the Vale of Sidim, where Lot's wife had been turned to salt. There was no damp of summer dew, where the open sky was held in a pit and drowned by heat and desolation. And where Isaac Hobbits, my friend, said,
here, from this earth, under this sun, with the water I have carried from the Jordan, taste it. Taste this tomato.
No, Isaac Hobbits. The first fruit of the desert belongs to you. He came with me, my friend Isaac Hobbits, to the experimental farm where the youth of Palestine trained itself for the land. They grouped themselves around us, and Isaac Hobbits held a tomato in the palm of his hand and spoke to them shyly.
It's only one plant. It might be just an accident. Might never happen again. Would you be willing to try?
They were practically children. The eldest was hardly more than 20. They were members of the youth Aliyah, boys and girls from Palestine, the concentration camps of Germany. They studied my friend Isaac Hobbits and the fruit of the desert that he held in his hand.
It would be a big thing, wouldn't it?
Yes.
God punished Sodom and Gomorrah for the bad things and caused brimstone and fire to wipe out the land. Maybe now we could bring the land back.
It would be a big thing.
All right, Isaacovich.
Let us all go together down from Jerusalem to the Dead Sea and take the curse off the earth.
Down from Jerusalem they went, singing, down on the winding Jericho road. 12 young men between the ages of 17 and 22. 12 who had trained themselves for hardship and for labor. And with the 12 went my friend Isaacovitz, the 13th. And Isaacovitz forgot that he was only a night watchman, that the hair was thinning on his head, that the years were stooping his shoulders, that he was ignorant, that he was timid, that he was only a man and never a prophet. My friend Isaacovitz began to cry. Desert of the Vale of Sidim, which is the Salt Sea. On July 7, 1939, they pitched their tents toward a place which once had been the city of Sodom. There was a young sound in the desert.
All right, fellas.
Take it away, yeah. Come up.
Oh, save your strength, Ivan. You're going to need it. Now, look. Isaacovich and I have marked out 3 plots of ground. We're going to plant on those plots first.
How do we begin, Shlomo?
With 2 steps. First, we wash the salt out of the ground. We've got pipe and we've got a pump. We run our pipe to the Jordan and pump the water in.
Well, how do we keep the water from running off?
Tell them, Isaacovich.
Gershon, Avram, Shlomo, each of you will take 3 boys and build a wall of a couple of feet around each of the plots.
Oh, in other words, we're going to make a little pool.
That's right.
The pressure of the water will force the salt deeper and deeper into the ground. We'll add water to keep the level up. Shlomo, I'm no scientist, so you better tell them the rest.
It'll take 3 to 4 months to make 1 dunam of land free of salt and ready for cultivation. But now we can't be sure, because this is a land that's been parched for 4,000 years. Maybe capillary action will force the water to rise and bring the salt to the top, so we'll wash each dunam of land for 5 months to be on the safe side. Everybody understand?
Right. Yes. And then we plant?
No, then we mix in the fertilizer. 5 to 7 tons of fertilizer for each dunam. And we carry that fertilizer on our backs.
And then we plant?
What do you say, Isaacovich?
Yes, Shlomo. Then we plant.
One dunam is equal to 1/4 of an acre. They experimented with 12 dunams of soil. They built walls of earth 2 yards high around each plot. They stretched the pipe to the Jordan. They assembled the pump. And into the man-made ponds of the Dead Sea Desert, the sweet water of the River Jordan began to flow. The earth, parched for so many centuries, went mad with the sweet water. It drank without pause for breath. Sucked the water down, 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 deep into itself. And with the water came the soil, leaving the soil above clean and sweet to the taste. On October 3rd, 1939, a wonderful thing happened. Coming as though from nowhere, she arrived. The first girl to join the settlement.
You are Shlomo?
Yes.
My name is Ruth.
That was all that passed between them. But it was enough. And Shlomo wrote a letter to his mother in Jerusalem.
We could hardly believe our eyes. But there she was, smiling, real. That first Sabbath night she was with us, we felt we'd become a settled community. That's the difference a woman makes. Just being there, she's made our collection of tents a home.
And there in the desert, in October 1939, a girl named Ruth lit the Sabbath candle.
Almighty God, this is our house in the desert, Bet HaRava. Give us strength to cleanse this land of its affliction. Give us patience to abide the heat of the sun, to work 6 days without sickness, and to rest upon the seventh. The wilderness and the solitary place shall be good for them, and the desert shall bloom as the rose.
Bet Ha'arava, the house in the desert. It took more than a prayer to get the water onto the land. It took 25 tons of water for each dunam, 100 tons for each acre. But the water came. The soil was washed. The walls of earth 2 yards high held the water. The water washed down through the topsoil, taking the salt with it to the earth below. These were the future fields of the settlement. But the strangest thing of all was that the first food to grow in the desert was...
fish. Say it again, Shlomo. I'm not sure I heard you.
But look, it's simple. The water is working on the land, but that's all it's doing. Why can't we make the water do something else?
Like growing fish for our table. Oh, it isn't hard to bring some young fish down from the agricultural station and let them grow here.
And that's Shlomo's idea, Ruth?
Yes, I decode it.
Ruth, your children will have a father who is not a fool.
And what will be the name of my children's father?
Shlomo.
He has not spoken to me.
Then speak to her now, Shlomo. Perhaps she does not wish me to speak. Don't face me. I am a homely man. Face one another. Ruth?
Yes.
Shlomo? Yes. Good. I'll go and tell the others. They'll be glad.
And so Shlomo wrote another letter to his mother. And Shlomo and Ruth were married. And their house was in the desert. While the water was working on their land, the water grew fish for their table. And then, after many months...
It's time! Transfer the fish to the new pond! Today we'll let the waters on our first pond sink into the earth!
And so it was done. The fish were transferred. The waters were allowed to sink down. And slowly, gradually, the earth came up. Rich. Ready to grow the first crop in the desert. They prepared to plant new life in the field.
Break open the bags of seed.
As a covet, we're all ready.
So they began to prepare the ground for life. But the first of any life to come to Bet Ha'arava was a new man of this earth.
Isaacovich, you will be his godfather.
Thank you.
His name is Michael.
Avram, say to Ruth and to Shlomo what you said to me before.
Ruth, he's not only your son and Shlomo's son, he's our son, too.
Yes, Avram.
Thank you, Ruth. Now every one of us has a son for whom we must build a home.
Now, whether it was working on the foundations of their buildings or out in the fields, irrigating and digging in the earth, each one of them was covered in himself a wonder. Whatever work there was done, they found they could do. Each one found in himself a dozen different talents he had never known was there.
It's as if we too, like the earth of the Dead Sea, have lain fallow for all these years.
And from the fallow earth, 200 acres of land have been reclaimed.
36 tons of tomatoes growing to the acre.
Orchards growing fruit. A library with books.
A factory for making ice.
A shop for carpentry.
A nursery for children in our house in the desert.
My name is Isaac Covitz. Once I had a dream.
Ha'arava. They celebrate the facts of redemption. But most of all, they celebrate a dream. For facts change. But the dream of a people to live and to work, that remains. Who are they? They are Zion, redeeming itself. And more than Zion, they are the universe. They are all the populations upon all the nations upon all the continents. They are the inhabitants of the wastelands of the world. I am only a scientist. And this is over and beyond science. There in the desert, where tomorrow the ram's horn will sound for Rosh Hashanah, the day of the new year, there in that desert created by God, men and women have recreated themselves. This is our prayer on Rosh Hashanah. All merciful God, be gracious and judgment unto all men. For we inhabit a house in the desert, and we shall not be redeemed until we make our dreams to glow.